Hello and welcome, everyone. This feels like old times because we're bringing you another episode of the 40 Life Podcast. And it is a podcast nominally about magic, but it's more about me getting to be an old man. So there's going to be stuff about magic, kids, building of ninja gyms, what video games I'm playing, and also the probably more insightful than me insights from my co-host, Marcel.
More insightful than you? Goodness.
I hope so.
Tom, you are well-rounded in things that I wish I had the time and the opportunity to get into. So, yeah.
Do you know how I know when I need people to give me insight?
Please inform me.
It's when you have to start trimming your eyebrows with real scissors. I'm in that phase of my life where your spouse is like, yeah, you trim those lately? You're like, no, everything's really fuzzy. Well, that's because your eyebrows are growing over your eyes. So you go trim them.
So what's your nose hair grooming policy? How do you deal with that?
We'll get into it. So I have, for some reason, like normal, like Norelco shavers, like my beard hair, I don't know if it's stiffer, but it just doesn't cut well, like pulls, and I don't like it. So mm-hmm. I use a wall like beard trimmer because it mm-hmm. just goes through it like a hot knife through butter. So yeah. I do all my trimming, you know, beard area, face, literally upper cheeks now, because hair migrates from up and it's like rain. So the hair goes from your head and it rains down onto your face, ears, neck, back, not under your arms. Basically, if you dumped water on yourself, that's where the hair goes. So I trim all the various things. And then eventually the last part I do is my nose with the beard trimmer.
Okay.
I just kind of dig it in there. So I don't have one of the fancy circular little tiny nose trimmers.
Oh, you just got what you have currently. So is it a close shave or is it, you know, is it like a buzz cut in your
nose?
Yeah,
I do. I have it like basically like, yeah, like on the, I don't put a guard on it. So it's basically about the lowest you can go. And that's what mm-hmm. I do for my beard. Cause always I get the ingrown hair. So I just like, mm-hmm. I'm not clubbing. I don't, you know, it's close enough. Is kind of that's my grooming in life is close enough. That is kind of where I'm at.
Well, that's the 40 Life Podcast, right? It's close enough. You figure out which you can get close enough with, and then you just live your life that way.
Yeah, and I've made scientific discoveries this way because I have somewhat sort of blondish to brown hair, mm-hmm. and the hair that grows out of my ears, it's this magical substance that. It like if I'm looking in a mirror, I say I have 180 degree field of view. Mm-hmm. 179 degrees of that, this hair is completely invisible. But boom, you hit that one perfect degree, and there's like a small shrub growing out of it.
Gotcha. It's under the right light.
Yeah. So to me, it's like this is like invisibility cloak material from most fields of view, except for that one they would see it right away.
I think it's from your field of view. I think if you had other people looking at it, it'd be more like, you know,
damn, what's going on in there?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's our grooming. This is our 40 Life Grooming Podcast. So it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I had to teach my daughter what grooming was. She was like, what's grooming? And, you know, going through all the words and
now,
it's something you have to do.
Now, is she like, say she's what, 3 or 4? I'm trying to remember.
She's on the cusp of being 4.
Okay, so is she kind of like fully potty trained now?
Yes, fully potty trained with the very rare occasional mistakes, but not, you know, like minor ones.
Yeah, but it's almost harder when they become like that stage because they kind of know what they're doing, but then you have to be on skid mark patrol. Be like, you wiped in the area, but you didn't really hit the pay dirt.
Yes, definitely. That is a skid mark patrol is a necessity. So yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, it's gotten good. It's definitely to me is liberating, you know, knowing that your kid is self-sustaining to that point. And then, you know, she comes back and like, I got this hand soap that's like lemony, really smells really good. And she's like, oh, smell my hands. So I know like every time she gets out of the bathroom, at least she washes her hands. So,
oh, that's good.
You know,
and then you get terrified because you smell the poop and you know, that's a poop particle in your nose. You're just like, And the only thing that might be as poopy as that is trying to decipher the product grid now that we have for Theros Beyond Death.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's like from the bowels beyond death. You know, it's just really, it's going to be difficult to try to, you know, piece this together. But I mean, we had this from Throne of Eldraine, so at least, you know, it's not a complete cluster like that was. Like, really trying to figure it out required that intensive spreadsheet. And here, at least they're building upon that and trying to make it a little bit more understandable with the collector's booster.
Yeah, but I think what's thrown me the most, it was hinted in the collector booster where they mentioned that one of the cards would be from the, I'm pulling up, they have a nice, they literally have to have a graph of showing me what's in this collector booster, which I found helpful. So Theros Beyond Death, these, I pulled up on Amazon, these are pre-selling for about $24 a piece for a collector booster that I could see. So you get a foil double-sided token, two foil showcase Nyx lands. Those are the ones that they kind of first teased us with, where they're, seems to be oddly divisive. I thought they looked really cool, but some people seem to hate them. I don't know.
I love them. I know people hate them, and I understand why people hate them. And I think that's that is a fantastic product. It's bad to make a product that's lukewarm, that's across the board, kind of just whatever. If someone loves it and someone hates it, you did. The Wizards hit it out the ballpark with those, I think.
I'm curious, what have you heard? What have people disliked? Because me, I see it as sort of being a, you know, full art land. I guess I was curious what people seem so polarized against this specific form of a.
Well, some people are saying this is like very Yu-Gi-Oh! Like or Pokemon, like the style of how they do their energy or their mana system. And that's the whatever, you know. And then some people are like, well, these don't look like lands. You know, it's supposed to be a land. This is just a symbol. And so it's more of that abstractness. It's a bit less magic-y. It's change. There's a lot of reasons why people could not grasp onto this. But again, I think, you know, as you play with them and you see them in play, I think more people will warm up to them. Anyone that really doesn't like it is more just like a change thing. But I when I saw them, I was like, wow, these. When I saw the spoilers, when they first did the you know, the supposed Walgreens spoilers, I looked at everything and I was like, hands down, you know, you don't really need to see the spoilers. You're not missing anything, but the lands are the best part of it. And I do stand by that. And Elspeth has moved up a little bit, but by and large, like, yeah. I think those lands are going to be, they're a good way to help sell additional packs. They're a good addition. They define the set. I think they're well done.
And again, as it seems that they're calling these the showcase lands, and inside of this collector booster, we're getting a two foil ones. Have they, as far as you know, they haven't officially said for the non-foils, are these going to be in every booster or how these are going to come in like regular boosters for the showcase lands?
I believe, hopefully someone could correct us, but I believe these lands are going to replace the land slot in the Theros boosters.
Oh, okay. So I was kind of confused when I was looking at just recent sort of official released cards. They also now have just normal looking lands for this set.
Oh,
so it's kind of, I just didn't know where, I just don't feel like they've stated where. I just want to know where I'll get my cool looking lands.
Someone has a spreadsheet somewhere, and you know, right now people are yelling at us, you didn't read the spreadsheet. And
this time, I actually feel like I've read these all the way through, and that's why, because I was trying to answer this question. So your collector booster, your $20 booster, you'll get at least two foils of those, and then we get our Constellation Showcase cards or Borderless Planeswalker cards. You get a foil one of those. Oh god, these are so. Oh, sorry, you get a foil. This is so confusing. A foil Constellation Showcase card or Borderless Planeswalker. And your so next.
The Constellation Showcase cards. If people think about the storybook cards from Throne of Eldraine. You know, the cards that had the really cool art and the that were more detailed. So essentially, it'd be the same thing. It looks like a full art version, and it has like an open bordered
and frame. The text box is kind of somewhat translucent a little bit. You can kind of see through it to the art.
Yeah, it's kind of like the game day promo style. So I mean, they look good. I think they're done well. So it'd be similar to that. So that you'll see probably alternative art compared to the regular version of that card.
And the Borderless Planeswalker cards, at least of the couple that they have shown us, which is the Elspeth, Sun's Nemesis, and then Ashiok, the Nightmare Muse, is the full art ones or Borderless. The art seems, I'm not sure this will be everyone, but they're like statues in this. I'll be curious to see what the lore or the reason behind this is. Because they look almost like marble statues compared to their normal card. And I'm just curious if there'll be a lore reason for that in the end.
I think it's just the theme-ish. I believe they wrote about it somewhere, and I read it briefly, and I just didn't absorb it.
Okay, why they did that? Well, they're apparently throwing basically most of the story in us at this point, so that might be okay.
All right. And so then you can also get a Saga card in one of these slots, or a Constellation, or Borderless Planeswalker. And the Sagas are similar to the Sagas that were from Dominaria, which are an interesting mechanic, and I think they're well done. And this is very Saga-ish type of set theme, so I think it fits well here.
We get our foil, rare, or mythic, and this is where you might get the extended art frame, which these are only in the collector booster. So, cool. So this is where, to me, I'm starting to get confused where I'll find which type of fancy border. Then we get a rare or mythic with extended art frame. So you're guaranteed to get an extended art frame, but not necessarily a foil one with this.
Or you could get two.
You could get two with this.
A foil and a regular.
And this is Benny Smith, who was on before. He kind of posted where he got some of these with Eldraine, and he in general liked them, but he felt there were too many quote misses where it just felt like kind of a dud pack. Mm. And it hurts when you buy a $24 kind of quote dud pack. So
hey, people buy a lot of gambling, you know, bought a lot of lottery tickets, and a lot of those lottery tickets don't do anything. So you kind of know what you're getting into.
I guess. Yeah, I admit I buy lottery tickets for my kids. So I buy lottery tickets for grade schoolers because I buy the one that's the little crossword puzzle. So they scratch off the letters and they have to do the crossword. So it's educational.
Edutainment.
Just edutainment. Just to kind of complete this, so I'm going to try not to get too distracted, but Vincent very nicely said that they are confirming that each normal pack has a full art land. The non-full art lands are in the Planeswalkers decks and the fat pack bundles.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, great.
Which is awesome, but added to the spreadsheet. it's good that they're, so thank you, Vincent. It's good that they're, I think, putting that iconic land that I'm assuming, especially a normal casual. Well, actually, I guess the fat pack would be going more to your casual player. So I guess they're putting the lands that are more traditional there. So I guess that makes sense.
Well, they did have the problem with the last Zendikar, I believe, where they included the full art lands in the pack, and basically those cards are now kind of worthless. So I think they're aware that, you know, people want to have their lands slightly valuable instead of just nothing.
Okay. So, it's again, if you be around a long time, you have to remember the days in like unlimited beta and revised where you got like multiple just basic lands in your pack. And it sucks.
I see some openings. You see pack openings and people doing, you know, $10,000 pack or something. And you're just like, oh my God.
Sweet, I got three forests. Yeah. Excited. And to fill out your collector booster, you get 8 foil common/uncommon or basic lands. So again, you can maybe get your revised pack feeling and be like, I'm going to get 8 foil uncommons. Nope. 8 foil basic lands. So you can relive the days of original Magic through your collector's booster of getting a bunch of lands and being disappointed.
So the question is, though, is that basic land going to be one of the full art lands, or is it going to be one of the fat pack lands?
Actually, how I'm reading this here, I don't know.
We're confused. So that's it right there. You know, Wizards goes for confusion. The best part about this is, like, honestly, very few people, like, if you're after a specific card or a specific thing, you know, whatever style you're looking for, you just buy it online. Or you're going to have a much harder time to trade for those higher end ones. So just buy it online. And I know you want to support your local game store, and you could do so in other ways, but, you know, I know one person that, you know, he's a foil cube person and he wants to get the showcase cards, and there's a couple ones that he hasn't gotten. And compared to some of the other extremely valuable cards he got in there, like the cost of those showcase cards and foil are not that expensive. And I'm like, why are you so, he wants to get it for the lowest price, and given the difficulty of finding these cards, you're not going to really get that opportunity to get it for the lowest price. And you kind of just got to pay what the market is demanding in a way.
Yeah, and I think kind of for me, the last one to mention, I think this is almost to me the most interesting, is their last card in your collector booster pack. It says one card from an ancillary Theros Beyond Death product. So it said this could be a theme booster rare, a Planeswalker deck exclusive card, or a buy a box promo. So I feel like I was kind of curious to think what you feel, Marcel, that they seem to be expanding this possibility that to get all the cards in, I'll say, the set for Theros Beyond Death, that you are going to have to be potentially exploring multiple different like product SKUs. Like, I can't get everything just by buying a booster box and drafting. Like, yeah, I have to.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue. I think there's some cool parts to it, but then I think there's also a lot of problems when these cards are tournament playable. And we have seen, you know, the recent one that just got banned, the one you take multiple turns. I can't think of it for the life of me right now. And then now you have Kendrick, which has been playable. You got Korvold, I believe I say his name is. And he's just won the Pro Tour, or the last Pro Tour, the Mythic Championship as a four of, and you can only get him in Brawl decks. So there's a problem when these cards, they're obviously going to have to get pushed so they become sought after. And then if you can't find them except in these additional products, non-traditional boosters, is, I don't know, it's a slippery slope, you know, and I hate to use slippery slope as a thing, but, you know, it can be very bad. We'll just have to see as it goes, because Wizards obviously is working for them and they're going to continue doing so. And I mean, this is just more of a push to be like, hey, if you really want to play cheaply, Arena is going to be your way of doing so, because, you know, these cards that are hard to get, and, you know, except through these side products, you could get them for one wild card on Arena, and that really is going to have an effect on the market.
And that means I'm just going to kick the living crap out of Sparky, the bot, because that's who I play most of my games against now. So like, I want to feel like I'm good at Magic. So I'm going to hop on and play a game against Sparky, just whoop its ass and get some of my experience points. So Sparky is literally one of the favorite things I have about MTG, and drafting asynchronously is still phenomenal.
Sparky, Sparky is
the bot. It's always the name of the player that if you choose playing by, you play against Sparky.
I think I've done that on accident a couple of times.
I played Sparky like two times today. It sounds like a euphemism for masturbating, but no, he's a bot on MTG Arena that I'm playing with the decks I got for filling out my account mastery, because I am still in the process of kind of building up my collection in MTG Arena. But going forward, it's still, at my point in life as a casual gamer, it works incredibly well for MTG Arena. And like you said, you don't have to worry about the secondary card market, which is oddly spirit liberating to not worry about Oko being $6,000.
Oh, as someone that has been deep into that side of it, or not too deep, but deep enough. Oh my God, is paradigm shifting. And that's an understatement. Like, I just don't even care about card prices, except when I want to get something for like the cube or, you know, the occasional EDH deck I may play. But by and large, you're just like, oh, this card went up to this insane price. You're like, oh, who cares? You know, same price to me.
Now, were there, for your side, Marcel, so the big thing is now in our theme boosters, and these were kind of always sort of a redheaded stepchild, I thought, for the newer sets, where you buy these packs that kind of had a color theme to them. So hopefully as a casual player, like, hey, I love playing white-green, or I love playing mono-white, I can buy this theme booster for my set, and most of the cards will be of that color or of kind of that color's theme that I can hopefully use in my deck. And before, they were just cards from the set. There was nothing special. But yeah, with Theros now, we actually have rares that are exclusive. The rares are exclusive literally only in these theme boosters.
Yeah, and as Vincent has suggested, that these cards don't look that great. I think there was like one that had a crack in. It's super casual, obviously, but it can be okay. But yeah, they showed those rares, the 10 rares. They're more like, you know, the Planeswalker deck rares. Or, you know, they had those packs, I guess, of cards that you would get in the promo packs, and it would be like a set of rares for all the core set. And those rares were just like, you know, absolute garbage. I think that's fine to have those in those decks. They're going to serve a purpose, because people that are probably more casual go after those kind of packs. And then those rares were probably better suited for people playing at kitchen table. They're not so bad there. They're kind of cool. They got some good build arounds or whatnot. But as far as like making an impact in standard or anything like that, keeping them away from that environment is where you want to do.
Yeah, so I was just kind of like, you know, basically have two from each color. We have two white, two blue, like yada yada. I mean, it's cool to see an enchantment creature serpent. I thought was kind of cool. Again, for me, I admit since I'm a pretty casual player, I don't have a great eye when I look at these new cards to say, hey, what's going to be just ridiculously dumb in an older format? Say like, I guess modern, or I should say Pioneer now. Pioneer is kind of our new modern in a lot of ways. And there's kind of a good point from Vincent here that in Pioneer that there actually are some Minotaurs that this could actually be usable. So it's always a gamble, I feel like, for Wizards when they, you know, we've had cards where they've been surprised. I mean, I feel like Oko is just the most recent, but one that definitely caught them off guard for the power level. Where there's a lot of people playing Magic, so there's a lot of eyes trying to figure out how to abuse a card that might seem pretty innocuous on the surface.
Yeah, and I'm okay with, you know, cards that are in these auxiliary product, you know, affecting older formats, because that's harder for Wizards to test. As long as it doesn't have much of a foothold into Standard, I think that's fine for the game.
And so I'm assuming that's still like their main kind of money. I'm assuming that's still their sort of main focus.
Yeah, and that's the main way. I mean, it's not the main way most people consume Magic. This is the main way people consume competitive Magic. But Magic is the biggest consumer is EDH. So,
and it feels like they're coming around to that. Where, I mean, nobody wants to address the reserve list, which I feel is still sort of our biggest EDH problem this day. Is if you look at some of these cards that people are playing, I mean, just some of the prices are just astronomical. Where I always go back to doubling season, but like $50 for doubling season. You're just like, oh, come on.
Yeah, but doubling season is not on the reserve list. I'm not a fan of the reserve list, mind you, but I think there's reasons they're keeping it in place and I'm not a fan of. I would like the reserve list to be abolished, even though there's going to be, you know, big, if that does ever happen, there's going to be huge market shifts and whatever. So I'm saying that just selfishly, so maybe I don't understand the full impact of what that would do, and what if I really want the full effects of, you know, abolishing the reserve list. But, you know, I think it's just a burden on Magic.
It's just interesting to see a game that was not, I'm assuming Richard Garfield did not expect Magic to be being played actively, you know, 20 plus years later. So like a lot of things, it's things you did and when you're 18 maybe didn't seem like a great idea when you're like almost 40 years, like, man, that was really dumb. What was I thinking? That's the problem. And now it's been enshrined in thousands of dollars of cardboard.
Yeah, I told a story at work, one of my, like, you know, early career stories, and it was like an idiot, like something very stupid I did. And then like I told it, like, you know, a couple weeks ago, and they're like, well, why did you do that? I'm like, I honestly don't know. Like, I can't go back to where I was at that point, and I cannot grasp the logic that I used to do this idiot thing that I did. And all I could say is, I don't know, because it's stupid. You know, sometimes your pet.
Why did you almost get the bends making your own homemade diving bell? I don't know. It seemed like a really good idea over the summer, so I made a diving bell and nearly died.
What happened?
So in high school, again, smaller town, basically the way to make sure you didn't get into drugs is we always would like make a summer project. This was something completely dumb and useless. Like one summer we perfected a potato cannon with a silencer. So instead of being like a shotgun, it was actually incredibly quiet. So we revised, we made, it was a pretty good design, so we made a bunch of those and distributed them. The next year is I read a book, but it had a diving bell. Are you aware what a diving bell is? Like a bathysphere.
I'm not.
Basically, I'll say, okay, before submarines, you know, if you wanted to go really deep, you know, because we didn't have like scuba and we didn't know about things like necessarily the bends yet or anything, you basically would take like a big metal bell, you flip it over, you stick it in the water, and it keeps the air inside. Gotcha. So people could go down much deeper, and that's some of the ways
you see the old times, you know, the ones with the tubes into the heads, is the same kind of concept.
Yeah, kind of get where you have sort of an enclosed space where then you're basically living at one atmosphere. So we decided we wanted to make our own, So I made one out of a galvanized garbage can and some pumps and stuff. But I hadn't fully thought this through, so I hadn't actually figured out the kind of the pressure equation. So I could have actually done some damage to myself. But so my whole goal was to go 30 feet deep in our local lake. That was my goal. So I wanted to see what the bottom looked like. So we made a diving bell. The problem is you don't realize how much weight it takes to sink a garbage can full of air. It's a lot. Like we're talking like 400 pounds.
What? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh. So it is a whole engineering thing about how do you attach all this weight? How do you get into the water without tipping over and filling up with water? How do you release that weight to come back up? That one's a little harder to answer than you would think.
Especially if you want to reuse those weights.
Exactly. Yeah. We made a catapult one summer. Yeah. That was.
See, that sounds like fun. That's something I wish I would have done, you know, living where there's more like open fields and such. I could have, but you know, that's a beautiful childhood you get to give your daughters. You know, you guys seem to have that go-kart project going on right now.
Oh yeah. Where the electrical cart is most, I have all the wiring done. The battery is on a boat from China right now. So it'll be here in about 3 weeks, I guess. But it's the biggest lithium battery I have ever purchased. It's like 10 pounds. It's like a 20 amp hour, very high wattage battery. So it's cool. So we're going to go really fast is the end goal with this thing. And so, and I'm trying to get the girls a little bit into magic now and actually throw a bell train, cool set for introducing younger kids because it has sort of the storybook vibe to it. And I don't know if that was specifically a plan, but I kind of hope they somehow can be exploring some other settings that maybe kind of appeal to that younger demographic. Because like Greek goth stuff, that just doesn't really resonate with them as much. But seeing pictures of like horses and ponies and princesses and stuff, they actually thought that was great. They loved it. So I'm like, fan, yeah, you can have a trapped in the tower. Here you go. You can decorate your room with these for all I care.
Whatever is the gateway drug. That's all. Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for. Now, from your side, Marcel, has... with the mechanics, like you mentioned, we have sagas coming back. We have our enchantment creatures. We have devotion coming back. Were any of the new things like escape, were they highly interesting to you? Or is there anything that you're really excited to have back with this set?
I wasn't the biggest fan of devotion. I think I'm not the biggest fan of monocolor decks. I like multicolored. So devotion kind of just doesn't play into what I like out of Magic the best, but I appreciate them. And I think like, I do like enchantment creatures. I thought that was a good way of, they did it with the original Theros. Heroic is, I think a well done mechanic. And I think they're going to go some way with that in this Theros. Escape seems like a powerful mechanic, even though it may not be as busted as the current set of cards in Throne of Eldraine, but we'll see how that develops. But yeah, I mean, I should be happy with it. I think it'll be okay. I'm not overly excited, but I think that I'm hoping that it's a decent set. But you know, with the current batch of cards, there's nothing that's making me go like, "Wow," honestly.
And I mean, for you, were you at all interested in when they showed at least one multicolor devotion card?
I did. They had the god, the black white one, and I thought that was, you know, that was happy. Yeah, and there's some other like that enchantment, that blue white one. I like that. So I think they're definitely not. We haven't seen the whole set. I can't make a value judgment until I see most of the set, and they haven't even got to the spicy stuff yet. So I think we're gonna be pleasantly surprised. They have talked about, you know, keeping the power level similar to Throne of Eldraine, which has so many busted cards.
Yeah, draft is just, yeah. That's one of the reasons I kind of got back to Magic was Throne of Eldraine. Still pretty fun.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it, even though on Arena it kind of turned bad. But ultimately, every game that I played, even though I didn't do that great in it, I enjoyed it for the most part.
And it's still amazing kind of how quickly they crank out sets now. Because, I mean, like you said, I feel like we're just starting to scratch the kind of preview cycle. And this set comes out in January 24th. Like,
yeah, I think it's about a month. But it used to be, yeah, you had a long period in between the fall set and the winter set. And it's still kind of long. I think they need to tighten it up a little tighter because If you're going to have four sets a year, they should all be equally distributed now. Now that we don't have a large set, small set, small set, that's the reason why they had it before, was the longer winters, because they had that whole break. And then you got two small sets and they doesn't have as deep of a card pool, so you didn't want them around as much. But now that everything's going to be evenly distributed for the most part, I think that we need to have enough time for each set to have its own opportunity to shine. And I think we've seen some of the ebbs and flows of Standard kind of evolve. Like the last, I think with M20 was out, that there was a lot of decks that were being explored up to basically when Rotation happened and then Golos happened. So I think there was a lot of exploration that's still available when you have, you know, enough time to see these cards get play.
Now, Marcel, what I'm just going to pitch to you an idea. I don't think this would ever happen or ever be made. Imagine if you could explore a digital world, an action RPG, some may say, with magic in it, like magic cards people.
What kind of a digital world? What do you mean? Like,
yeah,
the
experience could almost be described as being legendary in this potentially new massively multiplayer online action RPG game that sounds like every other game coming out right now.
This is for somebody that really, really likes Magic. I mean, I think Magic needed to expand their IP and put themselves into different arenas, and I'm fine with that. This is definitely not for me or most people with the 40 Life podcast.
Yeah. I'll admit, I was a little biased about this one, though. Because I bought and paid a small amount of money along with kind of what digital coupons I got. Sort of guy was like a Burger King or McDonald's or something. He was right. It was McDonald's. I think it was their, a long time ago, one of their McDonald's games. You could get like Best Buy digital bucks or something.
Yes. I hoarded
all my digital bucks because I really wanted to get Match of the Gathering Battlegrounds for the personal computer. And that thing, every orifice you could get kicked in, it kicked you in that orifice because it was just awful. Awful in so many ways, it's hard to get to it. It's fun to play because of how awful it is.
Yeah, would you spam creatures at each other and you just rammed against it?
You kind of had cards, you kind of had mana, but yeah, basically you're just, it almost feels like I don't play a ton of free-to-play mobile games. I keep wanting to say Candy Crush, but on the phone where you play out cards, like Crash Royale or something like that, where you kind of just play out a card and enemies, your little units pop out, they march up until they hit other units and die.
Yeah.
It was like that, but sideways.
Yes, it was so, but it was horrible. So my opinion, my honest, and I've been saying this for several years now, actually, since Clash Royale has come out, I think Magic needs to use their IP in making a Clash Royale clone. This RPG MMO is cool and all, but if they did a Clash Royale clone that you could play on your phone, that utilizes a light, you know, magic system that's very easy to get in and out of a game, that just basically blatantly copies a lot of the things that Clash Royale does right, I think Magic would do enormously well in that department.
Because Plants vs. Zombies has done very well with like a card-like game that, didn't they? Don't they have like a Garden Warfare? I can't remember what the name of it is, but they have like a sort of a card game now.
I did play it. There was Plants vs. Zombies Heroes. I actually went really deep into it like 2 years ago. I thought it was fantastic. It was very enjoyable, but they stopped supporting it. And so, like, I got in when they released the last set, and I, you know, got some cards, and I was like, all right, they're going to get new stuff. And then the whole year was just a very disappointing collapse of the game. And I wish I had my life back.
And that's basically everything outside of family is basically what you feel like at the end of the day. Like, that was just a waste of my time. You know, why did I always brush my teeth? They're going to follow it anyways.
So what do you think about are you going to play this at all, or like,
when I first like kind of watched the video, I was like, yeah, I like, they're sort of the old country buffet of games, but action RPGs I tend to enjoy. You know, they're not going to they're not going to be winning awards, they're not going to be the best game ever made, but they're fun to play. So when I hear that, I'm like, I'm open. When I fell off the track is when I saw the companies helping Wizards make this product, because I was obsessed. I loved the Star Trek Online. So kind of the Star Trek MMO. It, like many MMOs, it came out too late. It was not the right time for an MMO anymore. So it got basically kind of taken over by these companies that have now done this with a few different MMOs and made them sort of a free-to-play nightmare. And that's Perfect World and Cryptic. So when I pulled up Magic Legends, I'm like, oh, who's helping them make it? I'm like, oh, Perfect World and Cryptic. I'm like, oh, come on. So that unfortunately just made me, it doesn't mean it'll be a bad game, but I can already sort of envision all the free-to-play stuff that's gotten been jammed into Star Trek Online. And boy, the problem is with Star Trek Online is if you didn't get into it originally, I feel it's kind of like the Destiny 2 now that they've relaunched as free-to-play, is if you're a new player coming in, there's really no onboarding. It's just completely indecipherable. Like, you have no idea what's going on. And I feel that's going to happen even out of the gate with these free-to-play when there gets to be a lot of different, presumably a lot of different currencies or maybe a different way that you're, I guess, accruing. We obviously don't know much about the game or your equipment, whatever that you can modify. Onboarding gets to be tough. And I just feel like the track record from a lot of these games, when I see MMO, is not great. I mean, even Star Wars, in some ways, really couldn't make it work. They've tried twice, and they couldn't do it. Magic is huge, but it's just, I am very skeptical with that, and especially when you tack on Perfect World and Cryptic as part of the equation. I'm terrified. I'm like, no, you killed Star Trek Online. I feel like you killed Champions Online. I don't trust you at all at this point in my life.
That is a fair judgment call, and it's not Wizard's fault. It's who they're partnering with.
Yeah, valid question would be like, well, who would you be excited to see do it? I don't know. Because I feel like the Blizzard? Companies that wouldn't touch this, yeah, and even Blizzard now is,
well, yeah,
potentially they do good MMOs. We won't get into Overwatch 2 and everything else that they're hating my freedom, but things like that. I just want to get, I feel like this will go out there and probably kind of die. Because, and for me, is this was way back Monday Night Magic days, Marcel, when I literally got flown out to Sony to play their, it was a magic game where you like summoned creatures like onto like a grid. So It almost had like a strategic element to it. Oh, I feel bad that I can't remember it. But even there, they had a pretty big tie-in with Sony Online Entertainment, and that one still died a pretty quick death. So I feel like the track record's not there. And then they're aligning with companies that I wouldn't trust to give me a hamburger, let alone, you know, develop the online magic game that I would love to see.
Yes, and I think they have to partner with somebody, because I don't think Wizards at a core is the company that can do this on their own. So it's really about with their partnerships. Vincent, he actually pointed an article that's on Aether Hub. They're talking about a Magic Monostrike, the new mobile MTG game, and it looks, it says right here, it reminds us of Clash Royale and League of Legends. Looking at it, it looks okay.
I've never heard of this.
I have not either. This is basically kind of what I'm talking about. From the looks of the screenshots, it definitely seems like it could use better polish.
But look at the orientation, Marcel. They're going like left to right like Battlegrounds. My nuts are streaking up inside to my sternums. They don't want to get kicked. They're like, no. You got us once.
Yeah, I don't like it. I would say, again, Clash Royale, they're trying to be different than Clash Royale. They need to just be a clone. But, you know, this is their attempt. I think the characters are too big also. The battlefield looks a bit small, so I don't know. I'll have to play it. Offhand, I'm not excited about this, but I'm glad that they're moving in this direction. And so I think this is the correct move. They'll figure it out. Maybe this won't be the one. Maybe they'll build upon this one. Maybe they'll figure out what works for this. It's in beta and they'll do better. Maybe I'm just being wrong because I haven't played it. So congratulations, Wizards, for at least going in this direction.
That's I'll be optimistic because, being mobile, especially as a dad gamer, where if I can play it on the toilet, that is a positive check mark in pretty much any gaming experience. So that's one place, not 100% safe for my family, but 85% safe. Because kids know how to open doors now, and that
Velociraptors, that's what they are, right?
They kind of are. And they're velociraptors in the end, just opening anything. Is like, I didn't think a five-year-old would know how to A, find the grill starter, click starter, or make it make fire. Oh, but she did. With a bunch of candles. We're like, oh my God, why is there fire? Kind of proud of you, but terrified.
I completely understand. There's a point in my life that I was very much a pyromaniac with my brother. But we never did anything too dangerous. But playing with fire was fun.
I think it is natural. I still remember outside of the rural pizza restaurant, collecting as many matchbooks as you could and just lighting them all on fire at the same time. Just right on the main street. Not a great idea.
So have you played any of this MTG Arena game after party event that they had going on?
I did not. I mean, it was kind of interesting because it goes on for the 3 days. It seemed interesting. I guess I'm pulling up the link right now. So I'm trying to remember what the 3 days were that it was running.
I think it just ended 2 days ago.
2 days ago. So I feel like it just, one reason I didn't get to do it was basically it was kind of over this past weekend, and it's one of my daughter's birthday was on the weekend. So we were just kind of doing, you know, birthday party stuff. So I just didn't have a chance to really jump into it.
Yeah, it was a fun event. I got to play it a little bit. Essentially what they did is had two decks. You could choose either one, Ashiok or Elspeth, and then you got a pre-made deck built around those cards. I believe it was Brawl. So the Elspeth and Ashiok were commanders. I can't remember right now offhand. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it to say, yeah, you said the two pre-con decks, but interestingly, it had like, did you get like any power cards to play with?
So there was power cards in there, which was weird. Just very weird. So my initial reaction is when I saw my opponent play a Black Lotus, I was like, oh crap. And then they played some dirtily card off of the Black Lotus, and I was like, oh, okay, that was nothing.
Here's my Raging Red Cap first turn.
Yeah, it's not like Cube. In Cube, when you see a power hit the board, you're like, damn, I'm about to be punished pretty badly for this, and that was not the case. So they had the cards. They were with a lot of relatively low-powered other cards that kind of gave you the idea of what they had going on with Theros. I played it just to win my... You got a pack for each win that you had. You could play it for free. Up to three packs. I got my three packs and I was basically done with it.
Okay.
But it was cool. It was nice to see power though on Arena. They programmed it. It's working. So they have plans for power on Arena is what they're saying. If they're going to put the code into there and actually have it there and expose new players to the power cards in action, like, you know, that to me, that's kind of just really interesting. Because if they're trying to avoid abolishing the reserve list or even talks about abolishing the reserve list, why would you just expose people to power cards haphazardly? You know, all of a sudden now they may want to play with them. And that's just, to me, if anything is an indicator of them being, you know, at least observing the reserve list and the policies behind it, this kind of indicates they're just talking about it.
Well, and I feel that it seems like MTG Arena is the perfect place for them to say, why do we care about a reserve list for this product? Because there's no secondary card market. It is its own separate thing. You can't move cards or money in or out of this environment. Why not? I mean, why should they even have this list? If they're willing to code the cards in, why shouldn't somebody have some way of like playing a, you know, historic or whatever format they would want to call where you can maybe use power cards, because it doesn't really affect anybody else and it shouldn't affect the secondary card market and paper.
Well, it's more of, I agree with you. Like they had it on Magic Online and that's the way that you could play Vintage right now. Magic Online is the cheapest. You got access to the cards. The way they went about it was very weird and horrible. The Vintage Masters, I could go on ad nauseum about how horrible they did that, but yes, the reserve list doesn't apply there. The thing is though, is consumer demand. So people, the thing is, I think a problem is most people think they want to play with power, but they kind of really don't. And most people think they want to play vintage, but when they really get to vintage, they really don't want to play. It's a very challenging format and leads to very busted interactions. And what you have to do to survive in there is very hyper powered. And most people can't handle the, you know, your first turn, your second turn is just like mission critical, and how much your decision tree depends on you making, you know, perfect plays. And ultimately, you know, and that's what power is. They're exciting cards, but when you, the power nine, when you play with them in the formats that they're legal in, they're just, they're hyper powered. And we've learned consistently, like, we, you know, cards that give you free resources is bad for Magic. It always has been bad, and that's essentially what these kind of are, is you get a free Bana acceleration and such, and it just leads to bad game states. And as a, you know, Magic is a very delicate, well-balanced system with the mana really playing into that. And when you break that, like, things just fall apart. So where are they going to have people play this format? Are they going to create these cards for Historic? I can't imagine them putting it in Historic. That'd be, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what they want to do with these. So that's, I just want to see where Wizards is going to do it. I like the Power Nine. I love them. I think they're great. But I think in terms of what they are for Magic and where the benefit of it, I don't know.
And I feel like even though I played with Power since those days were there, the newer cards of Magic, like, you, just to pick an example, the Sagas, they're just, the cards are more interesting now. I mean, somebody's like, yes, this is a card that gives me some more mana faster, but it doesn't, outside of cool things like the Chaos Orb, they didn't really, I feel like they don't do necessarily anything, I feel like that's exciting. Like, yeah. Hey, I get some mana, I draw some cards really fast. I mean, Chaos Orb is its own beautiful, beautiful thing where you're flipping cards and people are putting cards under tables and sitting on them and all the other dumb stuff that happened with Chaos Orbs. But outside, otherwise, the Power, I'd feel, they're just doing something very inexpensively or efficiently, but it's something that you already kind of do with almost any Magic card. So,
yeah. The Moxes end up being like, just, they're just a land when you get to it. Like, you know, they're the land that comes out sooner, but at the end of the day, they just give you mana, right?
Yeah, so that's why, you know, I am not as interested in things like Vintage 8, because I'm not personally wanting to invest that amount of kind of time just to learn all the interactions and craziness that'll go on. I'd rather play a draft and have fun with some just really stupid vanilla cards that I would never otherwise look at. And that's, it's just crazy that Magic can serve so many different environments now. And that leads to where my ultimate hope and dream for MTG Arena would be, is kind of what we're seeing with, say, like Microsoft with Xbox Game Pass, where you're starting to see this Xbox Game Pass kind of become their, it's a, kind of like their product. I mean, eventually we'll probably be able to stream games with it. You can download games on your Xbox, your PC. There's a ton of stuff on it. Is Wizards sell, you know, make a subscription model for MTG Arena where if I'm willing to fork over $20 a month, wherever they want, you get this unlimited, you can play with four of any card that's available in whatever formats they deem they want to allow. And then I can play as much Magic as I want.
I mean, I could tell you right now, you could, if you spend $20 a month, you could get four of every card in the format.
Okay. You're peeing on my parade, maybe, but I understand.
Except for the mythics. Like, you may not have four of every mythic, but you can have probably have a play set of every mythic that you want to play with.
With your wild cards, basically. And
yeah. I spend between $50 and $75 a set. This last one I spent $100, but if you say that's every 3 months is a set, that's $60 for a set. You could just by drafting, the strategy is you want to save your gold to buy packs.
Yeah, I'm following what you told me. So that's how I've been doing this.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I gave you the formula. Like, if you do that, I'm telling you, it's $20 a month. So instead of a subscription, you can basically create your own subscription and don't have to rely on Wizards, because they'll never do a subscription. As much as I want them to, Arena is their best way of doing it in that way. And the way that they're trying to monetize Arena right now, especially with the Brawl a Day and such, I really
a little dirty. It. Yeah, it's a little dirty to charge to play a format.
Yeah,
especially a fun casual one. Damn you.
Exactly, Brawl's fun, and only on Wednesdays is not good enough, but whatever. But yeah, you can do that, Tom, and you can make it happen. But I just know Wizards, that's going to go completely against their business model. And as much as you would want it, you're just going to be holding your breath forever.
I will. I'll just have to console myself with all the knockoff bootleg cookie cutters I'm printing on my 3D printer now.
So what's this? You have gone deep on the knock. I showed you those bootleg Lego sets. Next thing I know, you're like bootleg central.
Yeah, because I became just fascinated by the knockoff Lego market. I was looking at Alibaba, but I think they're probably on Wish and the other kind of services that we have to access that market. It's just fascinating because it's like, this is so weird.
And what about it? What was intriguing to you?
One is that, you know, just the variations on the exact same product from all these different companies with slight differences, just clearly ignoring copyright law. it's just like the balls on this is impressive. I'm like, they're not even there. It just says Star Wars or some weird a version of Star Wars that is one letter different or something. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. And then I tried searching for magic proxies, and that's its own weird market there where you can buy paper versions of all your old power and dual lands and stuff, which I was like, I kind of wanted to order them just to see what they looked like how realistic they are. And then I've had a 3D. Go ahead.
I just want to say I do not support counterfeit cards, but when you come into proxies, I probably support that.
Yeah, and I guess I should. The way I feel, these are probably closer to counterfeit. I would have to, because they're not at all labeled as being a proxy.
Yeah, if you can't tell, if you're having difficulty of telling if this is a real Magic card, those are products you don't want to support. But if there's a clear distinction, like maybe the backing is not Magic the Gathering, or there's something on there that clearly defines it as not a counterfeit, those are the cards you want to support.
Yeah, so this is. I was just curious, but I mean, it's almost like if I was somebody who was still involved in, say when I was selling my old power cards, like, boy, as like a seller, like I almost would want to get some of these just to see what quality is out there for these counterfeits. It could be really good. I have no idea, but it was just, there was a lot of it out there when I was looking at it.
Yeah. From what I know, the people that I know, they're getting better and better. So there's definitely telltales of, you can just tell that is not right. But yeah, inexperienced people can get got by these counterfeits. And so you kind of got to be more diligent on what cards you get and where you get them from.
More reasons to play Magic the Gathering Arena.
You're not wrong.
It's made my life simpler. I can, you know, I'm a sad old man with no actual real adult friends. I'm just like, I'm going to play a game of Magic against Sparky because I feel alive inside just a little bit.
We should become friends, and then we could play each other some point.
Yeah, well, that's fairly new. Like, I forgot that was there. I will become friends so we can play, because it was shocking to realize that actually wasn't in there until recently, to do a friends list of any form.
You play the type of decks that I like to play. I like to play if I'm not playing competitive, I like to play very casual.
Yeah, and that's pretty much just because my card pool is still fairly limited, so they're just bad decks, basically, at the end of the day. But I have to admit, they're a kind of dopamine feed of feeding you like your packs and like these theme decks that you get for your experience points. It's pretty good. I have to admit, you get that little, you know, you're being manipulated, but the feeling feels the same. It still feels good, and they do it at a pretty good clip. I have to give them that.
Yeah, they have definitely hit the note. I get my daily rewards every day for the most part. So
we'll see, Marcel, we're getting to the end of the, I was going to try to keep it to about an hour. Is there any, I mean, you sounds like you've been playing a lot of arena. Is there any current decks or anything about, anything Magic related you wanted to share or talk about otherwise?
I mean, I don't want to risk going way too long, but I've kind of not played. I hit Mythic and I got ranked like 340 or something around there. So I'm going to be qualified for whatever their qualifier thing is. So I've been trying to play some standard. And it just sucks, in my opinion. And I really am not enjoying trying to play test. So I'm kind of just like, well, whatever.
So when you hit Mythic, was that because that's separate for draft and or limited and constructed, right?
Yeah, I did it with constructed. Okay. And I did it just best of one with a mono red deck, right? You know, right around when Oko was getting banned, and then that uncertain period. So the mono red was be able to prey upon a lot of these decks and didn't figure out what they were doing. But now the format has developed to a point where the mono red is just not really playable well. So I did well and qualified with it, but I got to find a different deck for whatever event I'm going to be part of. I got to find a deck to play for that, and I don't know what I want to do.
When does this go down? I feel like I don't know much about the Mythic qualifiers.
This is very difficult. I was trying to figure out when their cutoffs are. I don't know. They sent me an email, so they'll get back to me in the future and say what date that's going to happen, and I'll let you know when. So I don't even know if I have to do it. It's not going to happen in December, obviously. So I think, I don't know. It's whatever. Hopefully it comes out after Theros is released, because I'm just not enjoying this current batch of decks and Simic Flash and, you know, Is It Flash? And yeah, just whatever. It is what it is.
I've just dabbled in the current standard. Yeah, it seemed like there have been some pretty well-defined archetypes right now.
Yeah, and I don't play much like this. Like, this is the best I've ever done. Well, I mean, I did good at GP Vegas on a fluke, but yeah, I'm not really a competitive player like this. So this is my crowning achievement, I guess. And we'll see where it goes. But, you know, I like to enjoy Magic. I like playing with cards that are fun, and playing competitively is just it is work. And I got a job, you know.
And I was just reading a little bit of I found some information on the Magic site where it looks like the tournament is actually best of three. Is that fit? Is it kind of weird that most of your experience is best of one, and also you're going into a best of three kind of format?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I got to learn how to play, you know, big boy Magic, big girl Magic, you know.
there's something very satisfying about the simplicity. I know it takes out sideboarding and all that meta to it, but it is kind of nice to know, just like, here's my deck, let's see how it goes, and if I win, I'm going to feel like I'm a better person than you.
Yeah, I've always been bad at sideboards, and I think I just haven't really wanted to tackle it, and I've just been hesitant of being that type of person, and I don't know why. My entire career I just have not done that, but, you know, maybe it's time for me to learn how to sideboard and sideboard correctly, and actually think of Magic decks as a 75 instead of a 60 card thing. But, you know, I like playing Magic the way I like it.
I bet Magic Mana Strike on your mobile phone will have sideboards.
No.
I hope it does. I hope I have to pay money to unlock a sideboard, because if I play somebody that paid for their sideboard and I don't have a sideboard, they better win because they paid money. that's my pure dream. Right there. All right. Marcel, thank you for joining me. Is there anything else going on in life that you want to share, or like maybe like you're not using Twitter, so I don't know what you want to share.
I'll be back on Twitter. I just took a break. It's been fantastic, and I might extend it out maybe twice a week. I'll dip into Twitter. But yeah, mentally, I think it is. Twitter doesn't need to be consumed all the time, and you don't need to be a part of every conversation or in every mix.
Yeah, so I guess, yeah. What about you, Tom? I'm not very good at Twitter, so I probably end up using it like maybe, I probably check Twitter maybe 3 to 4 days a week. I bet I check it. But I can't really do it at work, so it's usually I'll check it like once in the morning, and then a lot of times like maybe once at night. Because if I pull up my phone to look at it, one of my kids steal the phone, and then it's a whole new game of trying to find the phone. And it's like, now I'm just going to leave my phone in the bedroom.
I found Twitter to be a good... Actually, it became a compulsive habit of checking it whenever I'm bored and it's something to do to fill the time. And I think I broke that habit. And so, yeah, I think, you know, but Twitter has its benefits. I believe you're the one that kind of got me into Twitter initially.
I don't know. It could be.
But yeah, I mean, I think Twitter, if you have your right group, and I think Twitter Magic is fantastic. It has guys, there's ups and downs. It's not the best all the time. But I think ultimately Twitter Magic has made me a better person, exposed me to different scenarios and perspectives that, you know, I may not have. And ultimately, I think is a positive net benefit in my life. But at the same time, like, any, there's always too much of a good thing, and you just got to learn how to have life balances.
The only thing that you can't have enough of is Disney Plus, because that service is fantastic.
Well, it's nice.
If you're an old man like me and you can watch all the old 80s and 90s like Disney movies, you're like, oh, yes, Heavyweights. Just, Mighty Ducks, just The Sandlot, just all these great classic movies. It's,
yeah, it's good. But once you see them, you see them. So, like, did Disney has an issue with their pool is kind of limited and they need more, you know, breaking content or, you know, consistent content. And like when I heard of Disney Plus and their price range, I was like, oh man, Netflix's stock price is in trouble. And now that I've seen it, I'm like, well, you know, maybe Netflix is appropriate price for whatever they're delivering content wise.
Oh yeah. That content pool was hard to get to before, it was really expensive to get a lot of the Disney Channel movies on like Amazon Prime. So now they're just all there.
Yes. I'm a big person on, you know, collecting hard copies of all the stuff I like to consume. So, I had a lot of the Disney movies, but at the same time, having them in, you know, the Disney Plus, I use that, you know, very regularly. So it is a good service. Don't get me wrong.
No, I'll get you wrong every time. You hate Disney Plus. Yep, you hate it. Okay.
It's not the greatest ever, Tom.
In summary, Marcel hates fun. He hates whimsy and he hates Imagineers. That's the quick summary, what I heard there.
You got that. Oh, no, the best thing ever about Disney Plus is I found out about the Lion Guard. See, my daughter, she was.
Oh, you hadn't experienced Kion and what's the name of the honey badger?
I don't have any time to think of.
There's the elephants. It's a great show.
It's perfect because it expanded upon the Lion King, which my daughter just like, she can't get enough of the Lion King. It's been on. I play it every day now, basically taking her to work, to taking her to preschool for the past 2-3 months. So the Lion Guard has definitely expanded upon that entire universe, which has been fantastic. But, you know, so Disney Plus is
Bunga. Is great. Just Bunga. And was it Bunga. Beshti? I'm trying to remember the names. I always remember Fooly because she's the cheetah.
Fooly, Ono.
Ono's the bird. He annoys me. I always hope for him to get killed, but he's still alive.
Why is that?
Ono is annoying and irritating. His voice? A, is just his voice is annoying. I mean, his power is like good eyesight. He's just lame. He's like the green, before they made the Green Arrow cool, he was like the Green Arrow.
I love your commentary, Tom.
Ono. And he's basically snack size. Like everything else is, yeah. I guess Bunga too. He farts on people. I guess in some ways he's like a Republican. He's just very confident. He has no actual skills, and he just leaves stink wherever he goes.
Yeah, he's kind of like Sonic the Hedgehog with meets, you know, Michelangelo from the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, Zookazama though, pretty good like catchphrase. I guess would be.
Yeah, what was very jarring was the first episode and all the references they made to the movie. I was just like, oh, this is disgusting. I can't deal with this.
And then you have to hide it from your wife because Rob Lowe, the voice of Simba, like, no, don't listen. Rob Lowe, he's still too good looking. Get away. Don't trust him. He's a vampire. All right. Well, Marcel, share with where people can find you, then I'll share about the podcast, and then I'm going to go see what has happened to my house.
What about your B movie? It's too late. Yeah.
I guess we can mention it quickly. So, if it's a long history, but I was a big fan of Mystery Science Theater 3000 because Mike Nelson, who's the second main host, he actually went to the same high school. So, from where I grew up, MST3K was even more popular than it probably was elsewhere other places. But those same guys, they went on to do a new service called Riff Tracks. It's been around for years. They started by basically making audio files that you could play over new movies so they could make their jokes on like a Star Wars movie or a Star Trek movie. Where they really hit their stride though, is they started mining like I guess, free or very cheap to use, like old B movies and like educational films.
Ah. That is
their best stuff. So basically, you could download like the whole video file with the commentary built into it.
And I bet they're public access, or
they must be whatever. Public domain, whatever the term is, or very inexpensive rights. So I've been kind of mining that, and they actually have over 100 of these on the free Prime Video. So if you even just want to kind of check it out, they have a pretty impressive selection on the free Prime Video. And if I'm pointing people to one to start with, if you're kind of curious to see if you like riff tracks or not, the one I usually have people start with is a movie called Radical Jack. Marcel, have you ever heard of Radical Jack before?
Not even close.
I feel like I'm a movie aficionado, especially bad movies. I'd never heard of Radical Jack either. So it came out in 2000. It has two claims to fame, we'll say. I'm going to say that at its best. Probably its biggest claim to fame is the main actor, whose name is Jack, and he is radical, is played by Billy Ray Cyrus.
I think I might have an idea what this movie is.
So basically, the premise is it's very unclear. They're very nebulous. Like, he's military, the CIA. He was like an amazing secret agent. Something bad happened, so he kind of dropped out. And all of a sudden, there's going to be a big arms deal going down. And the only person that can solve this is Radical Jack. They got to get him back. Radical Jack clearly has no experience in any sort of espionage as you watch this movie. The other interesting thing, which I didn't realize the first time I saw it, is that the kind of female lead in some ways looked really familiar, but I couldn't figure it out. I was like, no, why would they be in this movie if they ever actually did anything? And that's because the female lead, her name is Dee Dee Pfeiffer. So she is the sibling to Michelle Pfeiffer. So you have a Pfeiffer is also in this movie. She's been in stuff, but nothing major like her sister. So it was kind of weird to see somebody that looked like Michelle Pfeiffer, but isn't Michelle Pfeiffer in a movie. It's like, what?
Wait a minute.
What's going on here?
But I know this face, but I don't.
Yeah. So I highly recommend Radical Jack, done by the Riff Tracks crew. They are brutal, brutal to poor Billy Ray Cyrus going through this movie.
I will watch this.
The only ones that I can say they've been more brutal is David Carradine. So David Carradine, later on in his kind of the end of his Twilight years, he actually did a lot of B sci-fi movies. The one that I personally have always been fond of was one called Future Force. And it's set in the near future where all basically like police have all been privatized. So they're all like basically like bounty hunters almost at this point. And they're called cops. It has a dumb abbreviation for what it actually stands for. And just decrepit decrepit David Carradine, he's one of them. Never explained in any of this movie or its sequels, sadly there are sequels to this movie, that he somehow, not only does he just have like a big pistol that he shoots people with, but he has like this technological magic glove that he can fly around with a NES controller. It looks like an NES controller. No one else has this magic techno glove, just him. They did this movie shortly after he, sadly, I don't know if you call it suicide or not, but he died from autoerotic asphyxiation. So basically choking himself while masturbating or other sexual acts. So they had some just painful jokes in this, because how this glove kills people is it chokes them to death.
Oh.
So one of the lines is literally a bad guy is being choked by this techno glove. And David Carradine asks, how does that make you feel? And one of the Riff Tracks guys say, oddly, I'm sexually aroused, as he's being choked to death by this club. So maybe, it's hard to call it poor taste, but they're pretty funny. So David Carradine, Future Force, also is one that's pretty good. But if you don't want to feel bad about watching something, Radical Jack, they're just mean to Billy Ray Cyrus because he's Billy Ray Cyrus. And he gave the world Achy Breaky Heart, which is kind of a crime.
Well, I'm intrigued. I'm in. I will do this. I'm not much of a B movie person, but you know, I could appreciate it. Even though I would consider a B movie today or yesterday for the first time. I saw Arlington Road, and I guess it's a 20-year movie. Have you seen that before?
Arlington Road. Is it science fiction?
No. No. It's just like kind of like a thriller ish. It's been around. It's been recommended by somebody. They recommended it a while ago, so it was on my to do list, and I finally got around to randomly selecting this video. And
Has some good people in it. It's got Jeff Bridges, Tim Robbins, Joan Cusack.
Yeah, it's got some good people, but oh my god, to me, it's a B movie. At a certain point, it was just laughable, and the plot was very when it goes bad, it's just like this is a B movie in my opinion, but.
I'll have to watch it. There's we'll talk about the. I don't know if we'll ever actually. There's also one that multiple people have sent to me and does look pretty phenomenal. But a dinosaur priest that kills people. It looks crazy, but.
Velocipastor?
Is that what you're talking about? Velocipastor.
The dino priest.
It is a dino priest. It looks. If you're into. Again, it's not for everyone, but if you like sort of that really. Thanksgiving level of B movie. This one looks right up your alley.
Well, yeah, you're the one that told me about Sharknado, and that became a cultural phenomenon. So
it did.
I trust your opinion, Tom.
and if it's winter, yeah, Jack Frost is a pretty good, just bad old like 80s horror movie about a killer snowman that eats people. But he's a snowman, so he can melt himself to enter doors, and he refreezes, so you can't even hide in the bathroom. He's still going to get you.
That's a good mechanic.
It is. He's hard to stop because at one point he figures out how to turn himself into steam to get through a pipe to get out. It's hard to kill Jack Frost.
Jeez. That took some thought, actually. I commend those people.
Just keep away from those little silica packets and you're all cool.
Get some of that floor absorber.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The ones that if you eat, that'll apparently kill you immediately if you read the little packets. But yeah, but don't eat. I don't want that to become a new Tide Pod challenge. Yeah, don't eat a silica desiccation packet. That's not good for you.
All right. Well, Tom, where can they reach you at?
We'll say Twitter. I have to literally pull up the show notes. That's how well I know it. I am at PSG Reader, or if you want to follow the podcast itself, it's a 40 Life podcast. It's at 40 Life Cast for Twitter. I actually registered a very inexpensive domain at 40lifepodcast.com. And we're also on iTunes now. So you can pull it up there.
Oh, man. You're getting all the places. It's really easy. Stitcher.
Really easy to register on iTunes. So that's as far as I'm going to go. I don't know what Stitcher is.
Perfect, Tom.
Sounds like Stitch Fix. Do they send me clothes in the mail? Is that what Stitcher does?
It's the.
I want Stitch Him. Stitch Her sounds like that's for women. I need Stitch Him. With that dad joke, the podcast starts.
We're done here. You can find me at MarcelMTG on Twitter, and that's about it.
All right. But again, it sounds like people may hear your voice either on here in the future podcast, though. Sounds like there's some rumblings.
Yeah, there may be something down the line, but I don't want to say anything until anything is live.
Oh no! I'm just saying, people, if they want to, follow you. Maybe they'll hear about something down the road. We'll see.
I hope. I do love the magic community, and I want to get back to making content. But now I understand, Tom. When you have a kid, life pauses.
People were so mad when I quit.
I was pissed.
But you understand. I was just like, "There's a baby coming." Like, shit gets real now.
Well, I wasn't that pissed, but I was definitely sad and. Yeah, but I understand. Sorry, Magic. Like, yeah, family is much deeper than that, and friends are a very integral part of your life, and you should not exclude your friends. But when life requires you to become responsible, you gotta kind of take the bull by the horns, as they say, and do what you gotta do.
Take the skid mark by the piece of toilet paper. Or you discover the magic that is like wet ones and baby wipes, and you realize that they, even adults, should use these because they're amazing and they feel great.
Yeah, I think
I would wear clothes made of wet wipes if I could, just because I just feel clean.
Well, we need a completely, we use bidets or whatever. Like, we need to rethink using toilet paper. Toilet paper is a horrible waste of just resources of not only, people's money on toilet paper, but also just. you know, the process of the paper itself, very little of it is really recycled. It's all virgin paper being used to wipe your ass.
Yeah, like, it just doesn't work well. And as you get older, your just ass doesn't work as well. That's the problem. You're just like, this used to work well. Now I have to take products and take steps to make sure the stuff comes out. Like, this, damn it.
Hey, eat your fiber. Recommendation, go to Trader Joe's and get those golden
flax seeds. I saw your flax seed recommendation.
Oh, my God. Those have been life-changing. I literally just ate a dessert of whipped cream and the flax seeds, and I am very happy.
All right, later. You're part of us. Well, so thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.